To the other's gang, two sisters, both curious and strange. A likely duo and they witty from the brain. It's the magic hour, Mercedes and Jay.
This is part two. If you missed part one of this episode, you can find it in our podcast library now. If you're all caught up, welcome back.
The ability to focus as well. So do you think that this rise of ADD, ADHD, and depression because of all of your connection to self, do you think that screen time on the rise is why all of those things are on the rise?
We actually did a study into that, and it's one of many, many studies, ton of them, definitely pointing to kids having trouble with focusing and hyperactivity. Mm-hmm. It decreases as screen use decreases. It rises. Mm-hmm. Social-emotional issues. Rise. This was in a study. Probably the best one is called Learning Habits. If anyone listening wants to sort of follow this out, it's in Learning Habits where it was thousands and thousands and thousands of kids were tracked over a long period of time, and they found a direct link between the rise of screen use and the rise of ADD and the rise of social, emotional, and behavioral problems. Mm-hmm. What we found in our study is that when we negotiated screens out of kids' lives and just gave them a more simple and balanced life, mm-hmm. their ADD, they went from chronically and I use the term ADD, mm-hmm. but I think honestly using the term attention deficit yeah. is not great. Right, it's not attention right. deficit.
Mm-hmm. It's unregulated.
It's unregulated, it's excess, and it's unprioritized.
Yes.
That's the key to me. Is that kids' attention is just fine, but they're thinking about pizza in an algebra lesson. Mm-hmm. And algebra is being relegated to two or three. And and understand that their attention is fine, but it's all misappropriated. Mm-hmm. Because screens do that a lot. They flick images backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards.
And of course it goes into also like Red 40 and sugar and all that, but it's like the screen, it changes the way their brain reacts and operates and their emotions. But what if, say someone's listening right now and they're waking up to this, but they've already given their kids, because I know you work on non-prescription when it comes to behavior. Mm-hmm. Say they already have given their kids Adderall or Ritalin or whatever, the safest form that they can find, and they're waking up to, okay, wow, I need to change their lifestyle as well. What's the best thing they can do?
Well, look, you guys are asking really good questions.
we need more time with you. We might need a part.
I have two more big questions after this. So,
all right, so this has got to be nutshelled, right? Look, all kids are quirky, right? They've all got their quirks that make them lovable and kind of infuriating sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. But they've all got their quirks. Mm-hmm. Over years now of working with this, one thing that I've come to understand is that if you add quirks to unrelenting stress mm-hmm. to a child's life, that quirk will slide along a spectrum and become problematic. Yeah. And if the stress still continues, it'll become a disorder. Mm-hmm. All a disorder is an inflamed quirk.
Exactly.
If a child's a really busy kid, mm-hmm. right? They're not a sitting still kid, thoughtful in that way. Not in terms of still mm-hmm. thoughts. They think while they're moving. They're literally think on their go-getters. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Good way of putting it. Okay, and they think through doing. There's this mm-hmm. saying, "Think on your feet." I love mm-hmm. that saying because that's what a lot of kids do. Not all, but some do.
Yeah.
Okay. Add unrelenting stress to that kid's life. And they're the ones that are really prone to being hyperactive. Mm-hmm. If you have a kid who just loves things to be in order, just likes things to be orderly, mm-hmm. And likes things lined up, you add unrelenting stress to their lives and they become obsessional. You got it. Mm-hmm. If you have a kid who's a bit feisty, right? And you love them because they're feisty, you add unrelenting stress to their lives and they become oppositional defiant disorder. Uh-huh. But here's the thing, and Mercedes, this perhaps goes, it takes your question one step further, is that what we found through our studies, and we've got like over 1,000 simplicity parenting coaches and group leaders around the world now. So this is cross-cultural. It's one of the biggest parenting movements in the world. But the examples that we get given are from all these different cultures. Mm-hmm. Is that if you start to, the problem number one is that stress has become the new normal.
Yeah.
Too much, too soon, mm-hmm. too sexy, too mm-hmm. young. It's become normal. It's become normalized. But when we were growing up, it just wasn't like that. And some people say, well, that's just the way the world is now. It's not. The kids' brains can't cope with it, and they go into fight or flight.
It's not natural.
And they go in, right, and they go into what these ADD, ODD, PDD, OCD, there's no shortage of Ds. There are a lot of Ds.
Right.
But that I call that an emotional fever or a soul fever. It's mm-hmm. a soul fever.
Yeah.
It's an inner fever. It's not necessarily an illness. It's an exaggerated quirk. But if we give our kids cumulative simplicity and balance, if we dial their lives back a little bit, mm-hmm. just a little bit, we start to say, you know, I wonder if they really do need to do that second travel team. Or I wonder if they really do need to have that extra play date. I wonder if, and you start questioning this new normal of more and more, bigger and more and bigger and more. And you start simplifying wherever you can. I mean, it's whatever feels, my book, Simplicity Parenting, it's a kind of a weird book because it doesn't tell you to do one extra thing. A lot of parenting books tell you to do all this stuff. This actually suggests doing less. It's a lot easier, right? And through dialing it back, you get your kid's quirk. And many moms and dads have said to me, it's amazing when we just let them, we gave them a little more time at home. We gave them time in nature. We
they
gave them
so
time
to hang out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then they feel like they've got their little kid back. Many of them said to me, I feel like I've got my little kid back.
I know.
But the interesting thing is that if we keep just dialing it back a little bit, I don't think weird about this, but just sensible stuff, dialing back screens, just that, so we can feel a bit more comfortable with it. Dialing up game nights, dialing up baking together, just hanging out. Then our kids' quirk becomes their genius.
Yeah.
Actually, their gift. The weird thing is, the same thing that is their disorder is also their genius.
Yeah. Do you think that weaning them off of the medication or the prescription is dire in that turning that quirk into genius?
Well, one of the studies we did, a pilot study, is we had 23 kids, which we tracked, carefully tracked. And it was around about 90% of them, within 4 months, when they'd been taken off Adderall, Ritalin, and so on, within 4 months, they went from clinically ADD to being not. They were still kind of rascally. They're still moving kids. That's their right there.
They're kids.
But they're kids, and they're just them again. They're now reachable, teachable. You can be there. They're doing okay. And that was within 4 months.
Wow.
So for me, you know, Jay, to answer your question more specifically, medication, we've got to understand that the United States consumes over 92% of all those medications in the world. We have doggy Ritalin.
Right.
But medication, I'm not anti-medication. It's like scaffolding, but scaffolding is not meant to stay there permanently.
Right.
You put scaffolding up so you can get to a place where you make the repair and then you take it away so that the building, the structure, can stand independently.
Yeah.
So anyone who's listening to this, whose kids need that help with medication, one of the things to start to do is just to simplify, dial it back. Even if your kids object, it doesn't matter. You're in charge. dial it back. Simplify it. Just less screen time, less books, less toys, stuff. Declutter your environment.
Yeah, make it oasis.
Quiet it all down a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the only thing we can control is our homes. We can't control what's going on out there. We can control in here. And as you do that, see a doctor and see if it's okay to start dialing back the medication. So as you dial up connection to those four things I was talking about, nature, friends, family, and self, as you dial up the amount of time and you dial up those connections, dial down the medication. And there have been thousands of parents that have done that, albeit under doctor's supervision, of course. But that is what we've been told over and over and over was something to consider.
I love that answer. So I've listened to every single episode of your podcast, Simplicity Parenting. And I love it's geared for parents because it's only 10 minutes an episode, so it's perfect. But I have two personal questions that I have not heard answered on your show. If you have time for them, we don't have to go super deep into them.
Well, why don't you ask them and we'll have a go at them, and then I'll record them on the show as well and blame you.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So they're from my own personal life. So the first one is me and my children, their dad and I are no longer together. It was, sadly a very toxic relationship. So what's best is right now, at least, is no contact, which is very confusing, as you can imagine, for the kids. And my daughter, who's almost four, she sometimes will act like a baby, like she'll regress. But a big concern too, is that when we, go back and forth with the kids, which someone else will do the transition for us, when they go to their dad, they cry for me. They just want me. When they go to their to me, they cry for their dad. They just want their dad. And I what big emotions, what sad, you know, situation for them. And they often say, I just want everyone to be together. And we've been apart for over a year now, and this has still continued. So I'm curious, just in a situation like this, what is the best thing that we can do to help our children navigate through the feelings? I don't take it personally, but I do. I do feel lost on what's the best thing to say.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. But one of the there's a when you have like when you have kids going between homes, right? You're probably on some of the basic stuff, which you're probably onto, is that in their little backpacks or whatever they're taking to dad's place, let them take their favorite, the pillow they sleep on. Let them take it. Let that go backwards and forwards between them. Their favorite toy obviously goes backwards and forwards between them. When things get better between you and dad, and they will, one day they will, you know, is if the story book that they're being read, the story they're being read, that can go backwards and forwards. So they get the same story at dad's as they get at mum's. And what they want is they so heart-renderingly said, we just want everyone to be together. But togetherness can take different forms. And if they start taking, for example, a story and you're reading them Winnie the Pooh, one of my favorites, right? So you're reading them Winnie the Pooh, and he's trying to get the honey out of the tree, and he has an idea to get a balloon and float up. You know, that doesn't end well for Winnie, as we know. But and then you give the book, and you put a little marker in it, and then Dad reads the next part. It's sending a really powerful message, and particularly if the children ask for it, right? But as time goes on, you can start with little things like stories, really little. Most mums and dads will do that, particularly if the children are asking for it. And so you start, I'm a big believer in just small and doable rather than asking too much of each other. Just that, just little things.
That's why
things
I love
like
your
that.
Work. It's attainable.
Yeah, it's so it is. It'd be weird if it was complicated being about but you know, like a pillow. Daddy, can we put our pillow here? And it might even be one they take from daddy's house. It doesn't always have to come from mum's, because as dads, often we feel that we're not as good at this as mums are. We get that message, and it's usually true, but the not always, but maybe the pillow on their bed from daddy's house comes to your house, you know, and they sleep on it and they take it backwards and forth. Little things, little things. We have this saying in the United States, don't sweat the small stuff. But with things like this, it's all about the small stuff.
Yeah.
It's literally small stuff. A little, some kind of sweet little thing that they like to have by their bed at night goes backwards and forwards. But here's where this is actually leading to, Jade, is that eventually if you can build it up, one of the things that really secures kids is when the rhythms in one home, so like, you know, like you have certain rhythms of like when you wake up, the kind of things you do, and their dad will know about that. He's been gone a year, but he still knows the way things were. He still knows the rhythms in your home. And maybe he's established new rhythms in his home. That's good too. That's all good. Lots of things. But if you can establish similar rhythms, so the children, one mum was saying to me, we always, before every meal, say a thank you to the farmers. Mm. There's little children, and they say thank you to the farmers for the food. Mm. Do you? Okay. Mm. So it might be that your former partner, your was-band, could also say the same sort of little thank you to the farmers.
Hmm.
It might be that that the way they get ready for bed and the funny little things that they do in the bath, that happens same in both. So that you start establishing, because for little kids, that's their world. Mm-hmm. That's their world.
Yeah.
Their world is that stuff. And if they can sense, see, they're looking for togetherness.
Yeah.
And you can't be together with daddy right now. You know, that's just not going to happen and so on. But they can get a sense that my mummy and daddy do things the same. Mm-hmm. They're both caring for us and that they're friends. Even though friendship might be hard right now, they get, when little kids, see, if you think about when you watched your, how may I ask how young your youngest one is?
Three and a half.
All right. Perfect. Because when you watch your 3.5 year old play, they go through solitary play where they're just playing on their own. They're just little, they're tiny, and they're playing with their fingers and with a little toy or whatever, but they're not really relating. It's tiny infants. But around when they grow up a little bit, they start what's called parallel playing, where they'll play with a truck. And they'll go right up beside another child, and the other child will be playing with the truck, and they'll be playing with the truck, and they're not really playing together,
but they are
paralleling, right? That is the play stage, and it's a well known, obviously called parallel play. Mm-hmm. It's a well known play stage. When mum and dad can parallel, even over little things, then children recognize it because that's the play stage they went through or they're in. Do you see the psychology? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, and that will help secure them and have them feel good about things. Now, it doesn't have to be that a mum and a dad or a mum and a mum, like partners, have to do exactly the same things. Because you can't, because that's probably with some of the tensions there anyway, right? But if my advice always is for mums and for partners to get together and say like these two circles that are overlapping and look at the bit we know what we're doing separately. We know where we disagree. That's well charted territory. We've been over that a lot. Well known. What is it for the sake of the kids that we can do that where they can go backwards and forwards between our homes and sense that we're paralleling? We don't have to be full-on friendship playing. Impossible right now. But over the years, if you find those little toeholds, it's very meaningful because children live in the world of picture thinking and symbolism. They do. That's just what, that's their lives. And when you do that, that middle area, like two circles overlapping, and it might be just a little tiny bit of overlap. But if it's doable, like a thank you to the farmers, or like a pillow that go, like a story, whatever. That's why I mentioned these really small, doable ones. Over the years, that gets bigger and bigger because dad sees and mum sees, or the partners see, that this is really good for the kids and that they are not so sad.
Yeah.
I love that. Beautiful.
Great question. Thank you. The second thing that I Sorry?
Good luck with that, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. The second thing that I wanted to ask about that a lot of people, when they found out I was interviewing you, that we were on the show, that they had a question about was blended families. Mm-hmm. Because it's such a big topic. Sometimes there's, you know, big age gaps. There's a trio of kids where one kid is left out. Sometimes the couple has different parenting styles and different expectations when it comes to food and lifestyle. There's just a lot of different personalities in the mix that maybe the kids won't like each other. Maybe one of the kids won't like one of the adults, you know, things like that. How does the stepdad come in without stepping on toes? So there's just so many factors that can make it so messy. And if I could summarize everyone's questions that they sent me, it would be, what is the best thing that the adults can do for the children in this type of transition?
Yeah. Oh, you know, good word, if I may say, transition, mm-hmm. right? Because it's a slow transition, this one. Mm-hmm. It really is a slow transition. And actually, that's a great way, as I know we're getting to the end of our time together, that's a really neat way to end, because it does encapsulate a lot of what we've been talking about, actually. Is one of the things, if you've got a blended family, two families coming together, One of the things to do is to really sit down with the other partner and talk about what are the rhythms that we can establish that we can have in common. Values is also important, to sit down and have a value conversation, just the two of you. Mm-hmm. Where do our values overlap? Like, that's an important conversation to have. I get that. It's a great one to have. But it's often, people are onto that. Most of us know that we've got to talk about that sort of stuff, even before we take the decision to bring the two families together. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that's a little more hidden is this thing around having the kids. Like, let's say your kids, let's say my kids are really used to the same age. Let's say I have a 3.5-year-old. I'm a young dad. My kid is used to going to bed and just falling asleep whenever they fall asleep. I'm into that kind of thing, right? Your kid has a bedtime that's pretty biblical, right? So what do we do about that? And this is where the conversation can get very real and very helpful, is that we agree, okay, so let's do it this way each day. Let's, mm-hmm. like, I'm going to compromise a little, you know, compromise a little. Okay, so bedtimes for our kids that are a similar age are going to be this. Mm-hmm. Let's say they're a little older and there's homework. When do you do homework with? Because when we're getting together with our partner, it's sometimes interesting to know how little we know about their rhythms with their kids.
Yeah.
Right? So to say, you might say, well, my kid does homework as soon as they get home from school. And I might say, well, I always have a snack first because they seem to do way better when their blood sugar levels are better. Mm-hmm. And then you might say, huh, that's a really, I never thought of that. Look, okay, we come to this kind of compromise about the two partners come to this compromise, and then they do that, but not just a compromise as in compromise, but as a rhythm. Mm-hmm. And so that's now what's going to happen each day. And again, they're small things, they're little things, and that's what goes on each day. Getting that stuff, getting the sort of regular stuff worked out like that, like what are our little rituals going to be? Like we were saying before about thank you to the farmers. Do we say that at the table or do we not? One parent, I'm not making this one up, one parent was said a prayer, a blessing, but, you know, really talked about the spiritual dynamic. Another parent wasn't particularly comfortable with that, so they came to that middle ground. I was working with these parents. My suggestion was, you can guess, a thank you to the farmers. And the kids were little, so it was, and a thank you to the sun that makes the corn ripe. And I gave them a little kind of verse to use. And they said, yep, we can agree on that. one mum said, as long as we keep the God stuff out of it. The dad said, well, you know, maybe we'll talk about that later. But I said, yeah, guys, talk about that later. But for now, this. Mm-hmm. Because the kids need to know, if you're intending on being together and you've decided on that, then take the things you can agree on and make it rhythmical. Because again, that gives the kids the message. It sends them the message that you two guys are together and we can't play you off against each other. Mm-hmm. Because that's, in a lot of situations, what happens. The parents end up getting played off against each other, and you love her more than me. One parent will start overcompensating with the kids of their partner, and then their own kids start saying, why do you give them so much and me, and so on. And all that stuff starts up. Mm. What you can do is just get it together with your daily stuff. Yeah. When you do it, how you do it, and start right there. That's been really helpful to a ton of parents when they've kind of just lowered the expectations of what a blended family is, but you just don't go into it thinking, okay, we'll just, I don't know, we'll feel our way through it. We'll wing it. And that can be a disaster, actually.
Right, yeah. I feel like growing up in my household, that was a disaster. And I grew up in a blended family.
You're just forced into it without a choice.
There was no rituals. You know, there was nothing that made me feel safe in that home because nothing tied it together, really. It was just a mush pot of everybody's annoyed with each other.
And I imagine when you do those rituals, it causes the rest to fall together. The kids want to get along. The kids want that supplemental parent because it's only an addition instead of a subtraction.
Right. Oh, that's a perfect, Mercedes, if you can imagine growing up in a family that did that, do you think that would have made a difference? Not so much. What do you think, Mercedes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think my biggest core issue today as an adult is born, of course, from my childhood traumas. And that's around safety in the household and feeling like I couldn't express
your father
myself.
Didn't choose you because of that exact situation, actually.
Yeah. Or how you felt. Exactly. And if I could have been more, like if one of my core wounds is my father not choosing me over my stepmom, it's because we didn't have a situation in that household where I felt like she was a safe person for me. And she very much wasn't a safe person for me. But of course, there's all kinds of other things that convolute that situation. I think the rituals that you're talking to right now, like putting together a kind of a system that this house is expected to work under, would have made me feel like at least I know what to expect instead of I don't know what to expect, so I don't even want to come out of my room, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about kids being safe and secure, but one of the best ways to secure a kid is to have them know what's coming next, and then it comes true. Mm-hmm. And then they know what's going to come after that, and it comes true. That actually really, on a body-based level, calms a nerve. It calms the whole nervous system down.
Otherwise, you end up someone later who felt like they had no control over the circumstance when they were young, and now you're a control freak. And that's
never knowing what's around the corner.
And now you're over-controlling. Exactly.
Right.
But, you know, the fact is, if you know you're over-controlling because that was going on, you're already a good way out of that.
I'm working on it. We're having people like you on the show that are helping change.
Yes. This is therapy for us.
Yes.
Can we end every show with a couple of lightning round questions? But I was curious if you had time for one question about sexual abuse with children. So I came from a family that has a history of sexual abuse. And because of that, I can be easily alarmed and make things red flags when the reality is kids are just curious about their bodies. And I wanted to ask you, how do we talk to our kids about sexuality and their bodies in a way that doesn't pique curiosity or cause shame, but that also makes them feel like they are free to express themselves and feel confident to have firm boundaries at the same time? That's probably one of my hardest things I'm navigating.
It's really a great and big question, and I'll try and just encapsulate it a little bit. And this is not going to cover all the bases of this, of course. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found really, really helpful about kids in terms of their emerging sense of self. It's not just about sexuality. Mm-hmm. It's a sense of who I am in the world. if we want to have a child emerge into their bodies without shame, into the gender without shame, and I'm now talking about gender fluidity as well. Mm-hmm. We've got to give that the basic security and safety of home life in order to do that, because a lot of the world out there is pounding on kids. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've worked in war zones. I know war zones. I've worked in refugee camps, but it's like there's an undeclared war on childhood going on.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we can do for kids' emerging sense of sexuality and self is to have a safe harbor at home, a place where they're not going to get pounded with images of the female body, for example, that are totally objectified, you know, mm-hmm. or they're not going to get pounded with all these images of, like I said before, of how you should be and to comply, and you've got to look like this, be like this, talk like this, dress like this. That's toxic to a kid's sexuality and sense of self. Because their sense of self is going to be as gorgeous and as different as there are kids. And it's not going to be, we've got to really prevent our kids from having that commodified. Mm-hmm. And so giving them a place that is relatively low screen, where screen stuff is really watched carefully. And mm-hmm. and they don't get screens to take into their rooms, and
right.
you know that a screen is in a public place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Giving them a place where they're not just wicked overscheduled, really strongly overscheduled, where they never get a chance just to decompress. Mm-hmm. Giving them a space where there's lots of predictability, like we were talking about before, Mercedes. That then gives the space for their sexuality to emerge in the way that it will, mm-hmm. but it's theirs. It's not what they're being told it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Then, and that in that sense, the parents who give their kids, it's almost embarrassing to say, but giving children a space for childhood, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. giving them a space for it, is one of the ways that that little seed, that little tiny body that you're born into the world, you know, and you're held in your arms in those first minutes, they've come into the world to do something. Like, I don't know about you, Jade, but I was expecting harps and golden lights and angels. But my first child born into the world, looking me in the eye saying, can you handle me?
Yeah.
She was almost rolling up her sleeve saying, are you, because she's strong. She yeah. is strong.
Mm.
And, you know, are you going to be able to cope with me?
Mm.
And giving her space to go out there in the world, do what she's going to do, but come back in again and just decompress like she would. She goes out into those stormy seas of life. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but the kids do. But do we provide them with a safe harbor mm. where they can come in and provision, repair, mm. rest? It's not like I'm not suggesting we keep our kids from the big world. I'm suggesting mm-hmm. quite the opposite, is that when they go out into the big world, that they go out feeling strong. Mm-hmm. And that's got everything to do with emerging sexuality.
That's so much more simple than I expected. So thank you.
All right. So like Jade mentioned, we have a few short questions we like to end the show with. So if you could hug your younger self right now, what would you say?
If I could hug my younger self right now, I would say, well done, Dad.
Oh, that's so sweet. If you could have the whole world read one book, which would it be?
Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, so good.
Or more appropriately, the Deo of Pooh.
Mm. I'm curious, because of your previous question, were you concerned that you were going to fail as a father and that's what led you to your work? Were you nervous about that?
Almost the opposite. I had a dad who went through the war, went through the Depression, and he came out the other side of it all loving and kind. and gave me an image of fatherhood, which was just beautiful. And I came to recognize, as I learned more about the war and the terrible things that happened, mm-hmm. and the depression, and that he was a little boy in the depression and was starving, you know, and he was homeless at 14, and what an incredible thing he did to find that space within himself to be such a kind and very present dad. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, because there's generational, I get it, there's generational abuse and there's mm-hmm. generational alcoholism, but there's also generational simplicity, because we led a very simple life and he gave that to me, and it was mm-hmm. generational presence. He was just very, very present for me without being intrusive, particularly as a teenager. Not intrusive, but there.
Yeah.
You love that. Wow.
You could whisper one phrase to everyone on the planet. What would it be?
It would be the phrase of the Dalai Lama, I guess. And that is, be kind whenever possible. It's always possible.
Mm. I love that. You're like the Dalai Lama of the parenting work.
not such lofty. Yeah. I'll take it. Thank you.
You know, you read his work and it just feels so simple. And that's what I love about yours. So before we let you go, where can people find you and your work?
They can find the work that I'm bringing, and I don't mean to be glib, but within all of our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where it lives. It truly lives. This wish to give our children a childhood is something inside ourselves.
Mm.
Of course, I know what, but forgive me, I know what you're asking.
It's the best answer.
is at Simplicity Parenting, at the website simplicityparenting.com. And we have, you know, we have a lot of support, a ton of support, and of, you know, all kinds of stuff going on there, that if you want to simplify and balance out your kid's life, there's all sorts of support there. Because sometimes we can feel a bit counterculture and a bit weird, because you look at your extended family and they're not doing it. They're just sort of weirdly overscheduled. You look around the neighborhood and mm-hmm. everyone's just going crazy. So sometimes you do need an extended family around the world to give you the confidence to slow down a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you so much. Something I love so much about your work is it's not just changing people's lives, it's literally changing their children's lives, which is just a ripple effect, and it's going to continue far after you're gone. So I really, really, I'm just so thankful for what you're doing.
Yes.
My kids will never meet you, but you've changed their lives. So
your legacy is definitely leaving a trail of light behind you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, it's such a privilege to speak to you both, and I just many blessings on your work, right? The world needs it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime you want to talk again, let me know.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Don't tempt us with a good time.
Yeah.
Jade will be sending an email directly after this for part two.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Bye. It was refreshing, huh?
Gem. Yes, I loved it.
He really did feel like, you know, when you're around a monk, it makes sense because their life, their whole thing is simplicity.
Simplicity, yeah.
Yeah, like whenever I've been around a monk, it has this like different feeling. It's almost like you've gone out to nature. You've gotten off the grid, you know, and it's like they carry that energy about them. And when you like shake their hand, it's like it's something. It's so powerful, the feeling that you get when you're around them. And that's how I felt just looking at him. He just carries that. So
I think because I wrote a magic trick the other day, which I'll use on, I'm going to use it on an upcoming episode, but it told me how to, or the trick is how to remember what we learn. And I think that's what monks are good at, is because they, you know,
integrate.
Yeah, they've spent so much time on the subject that they are most passionate about. Usually, obviously, with a monk, it's usually about how to literally simplify your life to a means so that you are not grasping for material items and you are not, you know, living in that realm of materialism, and you have more peace available and you're present and all that. So, but whatever you're trying to learn and absorb, whether it's parenting or anything else, I think what that tool or that magic trick gave me in the research I did for it was when we can grasp all this information, and it might come in through books and podcasts and all this stuff, but then we can hone it down. We've memorized it enough, you know, and I'll give some ideas of how to actually get that really stuck in our brain so that we not just are seeing the information and feel like we have it in our brain, but we can actually relay it to the world in a way that is so clear and concise that someone else can understand it. Because that's hard.
I'm excited and to hear
I think that's
one.
What monks do though. You know, they basically have integrated so well and they've absorbed the information, understand it like
sacred pause.
Yeah. That they're able to then just in a few words give it to you where you're like, oh yeah, I get it. That's beautiful. Yeah. And that's what Kim, our guest today, I think was doing for us. So
well, what about your magic trick for this one?
Yeah. So today, my magic trick actually comes from our guest, Kim, today. And Jade, you're the one who mentioned this to me because, well, I don't know that you knew when you were mentioning it to me, but it's something that relates a lot into my life. And I don't have children, but I have relationships, and this can kind of go with any type of communication you're trying to have in any type of relationship, whether with children or loved ones.
And this isn't about your husband, but I've had plenty of partners that were like teenage sons. So
yeah, for sure. So this works on all of the inner child and all the people that you meet. But this magic trick is to not use two of the three stooges in any one sentence. So to clarify, the three stooges are these three words: you, always, and never. You, always, never. So we don't want to use two of those in one sentence at any time, because it's can be, it basically will not communicate what you're trying to communicate, and it'll probably end in some disruption. So you want to avoid them, even use separately, but especially in conjunction with each other, because they're very accusatory and sharp. And like I said, will likely be met with resistance. So for example, let's start with the word you. So when you're talking to anyone, especially a child, and you're saying you, it can be a bit cutting if you're using it in an accusatory tone. So instead we would replace it with we or us.
I try to do that even on this podcast. I try to say we instead of you, because it's not aggressive. And I don't like when I see a message on Instagram where she's like, you need to do this and you need to do that. I'm like, well, do you think you're better than everybody?
Yeah,
like, you gotta do it too.
Shitting on me.
But when you, exactly, it takes the should away when you're like, we need to do this. And it's like, it feels more, first of all, I'm all about things feeling attainable. It feels more attainable because I feel like, oh, you're going to do it too? Okay, I'm with you.
Exactly. You know? It's funny you say that, because whenever I write an Instagram post, I write it all the way out. You know, so if you follow me, you guys, and Jade, you know, my posts are sometimes very lengthy.
Yeah, me too.
Like my magic tricks.
Yeah.
So when I write it out, though, I'll often have all these eyes, because it's coming from me, you know, and it's and I'm also saying, you should do this, and if you do this, and it just comes out of me that way. And then I have to look back at it and go, how do I soften this? And how do I turn on my femininity? Because I'm, you know, coming from being masculine, instructional, commanding. Now, how do I make this inviting enough that people will actually want to do it? And I think a lot of that is like what you're talking about. When we create the we in it, when we say, you know, this is my experience, it's coming from an I place, and that's okay. We can all accept that. Okay, she's talking about herself. That's not offensive to me yet. But when I am demanding you or commanding you and saying you should do this, that's like, they're like, hey, I want a say in this. So
yeah,
I agree. When you make it a we thing or a us thing, it makes it so much softer. So, you know, like what we're talking about here, you might say something like, instead of saying something with that commanding you, you might say something like, why don't we see how we can make that better? Or let's see how we can do that. There's no sense of condescension in that.
And if you catch yourself saying you, like if you're like, oh shit, it just came out, or this is a parenting episode. I don't know if I should have said that word, but if you caught yourself, you're like, ah, oh, I already said you a couple times. You can say, I need to be more mindful of this as well. That kind of like at least closes it up as a we.
Yeah. Or I often say things like, I'm saying this to you as much as I'm saying it to myself, because it's
that's really good, you know,
because I do catch myself shitting on people a lot. And it's always something I need to do myself. So. So now, okay, if we're talking about using the word always, just to go through these three different stooges, you know, these three stooge words. So the word always or the word never, where we might be using a phrase like, you always speak to your brother in a negative way. You know, obviously if you have a kid, that might be something you're saying. I probably am saying something like, you know, always do that. And it really annoys me, or whatever I'm saying to Chris, which he calls me out on all the time. And it's not completely true, right? No, they don't always talk to their brother in that way, or he doesn't always do that thing that pisses me off. I'm sure there's plenty of times he's not doing that. So first of all, it's not completely true. So we shouldn't be just saying blanket statements like that aren't true. But also, it's so accusatory. It makes it hard to accept for a child or for an adult for that matter. So if we can replace that word always with often or sometimes, which would begin to soften that a bit. So we might say something like, this sometimes comes up and it's really hard for us when it does, or this happens often and it isn't pleasant, right? It's a much, it's softer. So it's going to be much more likely to be, first of all, true, and much more likely to be heard by the other person. So I think those are important changes. And then just to specifically talk on the word, or speak on the word never, as in, you never listen to me. Why do I have to ask you five times? You never listen to me, which I think gets said to both children and adults. And I'm sure we're all guilty of that at some point. So again, it's creating kind of a dead end for yourself, because you're painting yourself into a communication corner. Because think about if the child you're saying this to hears that phrase, you never listen to me, they're hearing it like, well, then what's the point? You already think I never listened to you, so why would I start listening to you? So it's calcifying.
They feel devalued. Yeah.
Yeah. It's calcifying an already hardened situation. So the alternative to that would be, we could adjust it and say something like, I, like we were talking about earlier, you'd use an I instead. And that might sound like, I get really uncomfortable when I feel like you're not listening to me. Okay. That's right. I would totally soften to that. I'd accept that way over, you never listen to me. So, okay. So, we want to stay away from using those, you know, two of those three stooges in any one sentence, but let's say you accidentally do, like Jade was saying earlier, there's some ways that you can recover. And firstly, now that we've listened to this magic trick, we will be better able to recognize when we've used one or more of those three stooges. And then at that point, we can say what I meant to say was. So once you've said the you always this or you never that, you would repair that as soon as you hear yourself say that. Take a moment, stop and say, wait, I need a minute. Let me reframe what I was thinking and what I was trying to get across to you. And you would use the phrase, this very powerful phrase, which is what I meant to say was. Right? So that, all that, y'all, hopefully will help you in speaking to your child.
And if someone is trying to repair that, give them credit and be open to it. Don't, you know, because I feel like a lot of times when we're like, well, what I meant to say was, and there, you know, someone can easily be like, well, that's not what you said, you know, like at least if you see someone making these efforts that Mercedes is talking about, like do your part and be open to them and allow them that space to grow.
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing, is if you can take the moment that it takes to kind of calm yourself from where you were when you were saying that one of the three stooges, the I always, or you, I mean, you always, or you never, that moment you take will hopefully calm you down or slow your heart rate down, like Jade, you were talking about earlier, and allow you to come back and say that sentence, you know, what I meant to say was, and then communicate what that is from a more heartfelt space. And I think that heartfelt reframing will be accepted in the way you want it to be, or much more likely be received the way you want it to be. So, and it's obviously you're just trying to figure out how to relate something that's important to you. Yeah. But we just, you know, this is a way we can become better at communication. And that's what this is all about. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Three stooges. And what
I know that Kim John Payne has an episode on that. It's like 10 minutes long, mm-hmm. and it's different than what Mercedes just said, but it's the same theme. So if you felt like that really resonated with you and it's something you want to work on, you can go listen to that episode. His podcast is called Simplicity Parenting. And my magic trick is also from one of his episodes. And I don't know which episode, but you should just listen. We should just listen to all of them.
I'd invite you to join me in listening to...
I listen to them as they come out because it's easy. They're only 10 minutes long. Mm-hmm. But one thing that really, really stuck with me was how, especially for me, I put a sense of urgency on everything. And if, say, Mercedes, you send me three things about the podcast and it's a time that I normally connect with the kids because it's right before bedtime. For some reason, there's something in me that feels like, well, I need to answer Mercedes' three texts, or I need to finish this grocery order. Like whatever I'm in the middle of or whatever's calling on me, I for some reason give this sense of urgency, mm-hmm. which I do with most things in my life that's something I'm really, really working on. But if I'm working on those things because I feel urgent and my kid comes to me for something, I always tell them to hold on. I rarely put my phone down and say, sure, honey. And then in my head, I'll come back to that in a minute. Because really, what is it going to be? 5-10 minutes? Probably. Maybe it's even going to be 30. But in reality, in the big picture of it, like it can wait.
Yeah.
And also think about the reaction of your child. Long term, they can either remember that like you were always busy.
Yeah.
And they felt less important. They felt like you were always preoccupied, or they can feel like, wow, I'm really important. My mom sat that to the side. And it's not always going to be possible, but when it is going to be lasting for your kid. You know, imagine like when you're with a partner and they're just always busy. They always have something that they have to do. But imagine when like you say something to them, imagine the reaction when they don't even look up from their phone and they just tell you, hold on. Or they just put their finger up and they're like, give me 10 minutes.
Yeah. Or my husband constantly wears ear pods and never hears anything I say or pretends he's not hearing it because he has the ear pods in as an excuse.
So think about how that makes you feel. I always compare partners to children because for some reason we tend to have, it tends to be more understandable for, I don't know why, maybe we relate to them more since they're adults. But imagine though, how you feel like, oh man, whatever they're doing must be really important, more important than what I, you know, I'm coming to him with. But imagine if he immediately, when you came to him, set his phone to the side, had whatever conversation you needed or answered your question or embraced you, whatever, and then went back to that. You would feel like so valued and so
I feel like
prioritized.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
And that's what I want my kids. I really don't want my kids to grow up feeling like they weren't
prioritized. Yeah.
Or they weren't important. Yeah.
And it might be setting aside certain hours of the day that are work hours, mommy's going to be on the phone, and then certain hours of the day where
that's always the thing
first.
I one time raised my voice at Soul because he kept asking for something. Every 5 minutes he would ask for something. And I was like, can you just give me 10 minutes? Because I was dealing with something with you in the podcast. And then I realized like that poor freaking kid, like I just raised my voice at him because this could have waited till after bedtime. So that's that day I said, okay, from now on, from 12 to 2, no phone. And from 5:45 to 6:45, no phone. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but it is in my home because I'm with them all day long. But no one is going to be able to do this 100%. So if we at least try to apply it, it's only going to, you know, balance us a little bit
more.
Okay, you guys, thanks for listening. We hope you found this conversation as enlightening as we did and as refreshing. If so, please share it with your friends and family. This would mean so much to us. And you never know, you know, the parents around you, you never know what they're struggling with. So sending this to them, it could benefit them in more ways than one. Remember also that you can go to our Instagram page at The Magic Hour to ask us or any of our future guests a question. Talk to you guys next week. Until then, Be a light.
Quick disclaimer. We are not medical professionals, so following any of our protocols or advice should be done at your own risk, people. And please remember to always, always do your own research. tap into that extraordinary growth mindset we all have access to within ourselves and seek out your own answers. Come on, guys, you know the deal. And by the way, if you are a medical professional or an expert in any topic we cover and you feel we are not giving accurate information about it, please find somewhere to contact us. Contact us via social or email us at our website and let us know. A major goal of ours in doing this podcast is to bring value to people's lives by sharing helpful insights and info. So we welcome being corrected at any time, and we'll be happy to share any of our fuck-ups with our listeners so as to get us all back on track to discovering our happiest, healthiest selves.